What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in-store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Devon Franklin, head of Franklin Entertainment. He's a veteran film and TV producer whose latest effort is Flamin' Hot, which comes out this week from Searchlight and Hulu. I have wanted Franklin to be a guest on this podcast for some time. He's blazed a unique trail in Hollywood as a businessman with a mission and a purpose rooted in a higher calling. He's a producer who has reached the greatest heights of the box office, and he also works on small independent projects. As Franklin explains, he goes where the best stories take him and figures out the business afterward. He's a hands-on, in-the-trenches producer, and that gives him a strong sense of where the business is heading in any given moment. Franklin also gets great insight from working as a motivational speaker and author. He has been guided by his strong Christian faith since he was the age of 9. It's working well for him, as you will hear. Franklin shares his candid thoughts about working as a producer in the streaming marketplace versus theatrical. He also talks about why Hollywood in recent years has shied away from faith-based content and how he hopes to broaden the definition of the genre with his work. He also makes an intriguing argument for the title that qualifies as the biggest faith-based franchise of all time. That's all coming up after this break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
We're back with an interview with Flamin' Hot producer Devon Franklin. Devon Franklin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Honored to be here.
Well, I wanted to start out by talking. Devon, you are an increasingly rare species out there these days, an independent producer who truly works with the biggest studios on big projects, and you also do your own independent projects. I know you work in everything from financing to conceiving the idea to lighting up the financing to being there in the trenches when they're producing, and you've done so many films, and now I'm seeing a lot more TV on your resume as well. Let me just start with a kind of a broad question. Hollywood has been in the throes of a historic transition for, it's probably going on 10 years.
Right.
How are you in your business, in the specific areas that you work in, where are you feeling those changes, and where are you seeing the most opportunity right now? And I know that right now is a hard time because we have writers on strike and, you know, walking around the streets. But so, like, setting aside the specifics of the writer's strike, where are you seeing the most opportunity for your business?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the thing that has changed the most over the years is that, you know, as the business is navigating how the business is going to work, you know, I mean, before it was very straightforward. You know, you develop a film. You know, it gets marketed, distributed in theaters. That was the business. So everyone knew the business. And it's always hard to get a yes in our business. And it's always hard to get a movie made. But previously, that path was much clearer. And I think it was easier to do business. In this marketplace, it's more challenging because there are so many unknowns. And everyone is everyone meaning like each studio, each streamer has their own process by which they do business. Before, you know, yes, of course, Paramount might make different movies than Sony, but at the end of the day, they're all making movies. They all have the same process. Whereas now every studio has a different process. And because there is still a question of, okay, what's theatrical, what's streaming, you know, who's going to show up where, that means the decision-making process, in my experience, tends to be more delayed and a little more obtuse than it previously has been. So for me, you know, the opportunities are in remembering that storytelling is powerful and storytelling unites us all. And no matter how the mediums change, what doesn't change is our human connection to great stories. So I just try to stay focused on that. Like, okay, finding great stories and then doing my best to, you know, find, you know, studios or streamers or, you know, companies that I can work with to fund those great stories. Because if I get caught up in the business changing, I think it would cause me to lose sight of what matters most. is at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is a great story, period. And the business is always going to change. There's always going to be variables we have to factor in. But that is the most important variable, and I just try to stay very mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. I think that certainly you can't go wrong keeping your eye on right. the prize of the story.
That's right. That's right.
Let me ask you, is it important to you, is it important to the final product that when you go into a deal that you're very aware that it's settled where it's going? This will be theatrical, and then it will have a window on a streamer, or this is going streaming first, and maybe there'll be an awards run. Like, is it important to you in producing that you know that path?
No. No, it's not important at all. You know, in the film that I just produced, Flamin' Hot, when I originally sold the project, you know, I sold it as a theatrical. And then as we were getting closer to making the film, Searchlight wanted to bring in Hulu. And so that seemed to make sense. Like, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. So I could have been upset initially, but I said, you know, I want to be pragmatic and I want to stay agnostic about how these films come to the world. Because if I was financing the films and I was in control of distribution, then I get to say, but I'm not, okay? So those that are, hey, I get it. They have a point of view and I'm going to respect that. So like with Flamin' Hot, when the decision came to go to a streamer, I was like, all right, cool. You know, and then now we're going to be on Hulu and Disney Plus, which is great. So it's not essential for me personally to know where it's going to end up.
And even for the qualitative. I mean,
No, I'm still making
this. It's a story.
There you go. I'm still going to make a high quality movie. I'm still going to put the movie together, you know, in the best way possible. Still hire great filmmakers, you know, great actors. So for me, getting the movie made is the win. And ultimately how it ultimately gets distributed is just a part of the process for me.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, certainly I know people have strong opinions and respect those, but certainly, especially for a movie like Flamin' Hot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, many millions of people will be able to, with a click, check it out on Hulu.
Yes.
And that, you know, that can't be bad for getting the story out and having it go into the world.
No, I mean, it's not bad at all. I think, you know, there's a difference between preference and pragmatism, right? So if I had a preference, would I want it to be in theaters? Yes. But, you know, me being a pragmatic producer, if streaming is the best way to get this film out, I'd rather have it out in the world than not. So if the decision is between theatrical distribution or not, I mean, you know, streaming, you know, distribution or not, then I'm going to choose streaming because getting the movie made is most important. And in this scenario, you know, I do feel good about the plan and the marketing and the publicity and, you know, and hopefully the fact that it is on these platforms will allow it to reach, you know, an even broader, wider audience than it may have been able to reach theatrically. So, you know, it's one of those things that there's no hard and fast rule. You know, I grew up on movies. I'm a believer in the theatrical experience. I'm a believer in sitting in a theater with people you don't know and having an amazing collective journey together. I love that. Mm-hmm. And I also recognize we're in a different world and not every movie is going to be seen that way. And I can live with that.
Mm-hmm. What is your sense? I won't ask you to name names, but just do you have a sense at the, you know, at the high level, at the studio level, is there fear about the theatrical experience going away? Do you think that, like, do people think that it is obviously, you know, very challenging couple of years with the pandemic, but does it come back?
I have not, in my, you know, anecdotal dealings with, you know, various studios, there has not been any fear that I've noticed about the theatrical experience. I think the question is, which movies will work without it? And what's the path for them, those movies to be successful? You know, the theatrical path still is a very clear one. Everyone knows how to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, whether the movie's going to be successful or not, that comes down to so many factors, but you know the process. The process to make a movie successful on streaming is still, you know, in my vantage point, catches as catch can. You know, it's like each movie is a different process and every movie has a different marketing publicity plan. So I think there is still some trepidation and or confusion about what are the things that need to happen to open a streaming movie successfully. So I have not seen any fear around theatrical distribution going away. If anything, I've seen more fear about the movies that are not going theatrically. How do we ensure that these films will be successful from a streaming standpoint?
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a great analysis. I appreciate it. on the television side, mm-hmm. I know that you have really been doing everything from some unscripted shows mm-hmm. for OWN. You've been doing, you know, big scripted projects for CBS, yeah. where your company mm-hmm. has a deal at a TV production deal yep. at CBS. A gospel music show for BET yeah. Plus called yeah. Kingdom Business. Yeah.
We're in season
very
two.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And a really nice range of things.
Yes.
How from the business side of doing business in television, are you finding it similar to features where everybody's kind of figuring it out show by show?
Well, no, because so even though, how do I articulate this? So like in film, mm-hmm. you know, the introduction of streaming and movies coming to that audience, to an audience, it's a different way that the audience takes in a movie.
Right.
So it's a very different thing to go to a movie theater versus watching it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in television, you're always used to being at home.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
whether it's streaming or whether it's on a network, the audience that you're programming for is already predispositioned to see that content mm-hmm. in the medium that streaming is providing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different thing. So it's actually on some level easier because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, yes, of course the economics have to make sense and, you know, the casting has to make sense and whatnot, but it's the decision-making process around making a series, in my experience, is a little more clear than the decision-making process around certain films. And in my experience being a producer, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to expand into television, one is because I'm passionate about stories and I not every story can be told only in, you know, two and a half hour, maybe 3 hour film.
3 hours seems to be the
new
normal.
I know, right?
But
exactly.
Flamin' Hot, I noticed the running time on that is a nice, you're just
yes,
under 2 hours.
That's right.
Yeah,
and we
like
worked
that.
Hard to get under two. We're mindful of people's time.
thank you.
You know, of course. So for me, I wanted to get into television because there are other stories that I wanted to tell mm-hmm. that television was more suited for. And that process of TV, because there's so many scripts, you know, it's like, it's great and it's also difficult in that there's so much television development that, you know, it's still very difficult to get something made. However, you get answers faster. So you know if you're gonna sell a pilot, you know if you're gonna get commissioned to write, you know, the pilot, you know if your pilot's gonna get made, you know if your pilot's not gonna get picked up. And all of these things happen relatively within, you know, a span of a couple months
mm-hmm.
once you're going to market with the project and you sell it. Whereas with film, I mean, going back to Flamin' Hot, I have been working on Flamin' Hot for 6 or 7 years. And when it was going to get made and how it was going to get made was always, we didn't know. So one of the things I love about television is that the decision-making process is, even with the introduction of streaming, in my experience, decision-making process hasn't changed that much. And if anything, it's more clarifying to know if something's going or if it's not going. Whereas in features, it's very different.
It's a little more opaque and a little.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Tell me, what was the spark for you on Flaming Hot? What drew you to that story?
You know, I am in this business to make uplifting stories. That's why I'm here. You know, I've always wanted to use.
Bless you. We need more. We need
thank
more.
You.
We need more.
Amen. Keep saying it. Amen. You know, that's why I'm here. I want to make movies that can uplift the human spirit. And, you know, my father, I'm from Oakland, California, and my father died of a heart attack when I was 9 years old. And he was 36 years old. And my mother didn't have money for therapy. So my therapy became watching movies and TV shows and going to church.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, movies like Rocky and The Color Purple and Back to the Future, they gave me, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, it gave me a lot of hope as a kid. And when I could see myself in those characters and their ability to endure difficulty and still prevail. And I was so inspired by those experiences. I just felt like, oh, I got to be a part of Hollywood. Like, I want to be a part of the business that's you know, here to create that magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the mission statement from when I was a teenager, that I want to go to Hollywood. I want to make inspirational, aspirational, uplifting films. And so to answer your question, once I met with Richard Montañez and his wife, Judy Montañez, and they told me their story.
Mm-hmm.
I as soon as they finished telling me their story, I just felt like, well, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm in this business. I'm in this business for people like them. You know, people who have great stories that the stories need to, one, be memorialized, because once you make a film, it's eternal. So memorialize these great stories. And two, help bring people hope in the form of great stories that happen to be true. And so when what struck me about the story was just, you know, Richard's tenacity, his perseverance, you know, starting at Frito-Lay as a janitor and not allowing that title to stop him from dreaming and thinking, you know, in a way that others would say, well, you can't think like that because you're a janitor. And he, his thing response was like, well, why not? You know, and to see all that he had to endure, the difficulties, the heartache, the hardship, the discrimination, all of those things, and still keep a positive disposition, keep showing up, and in the process, do something historic. And then their marriage, you know, didn't suffer because of it. So there were so many aspects to the story, but it was those specifics that I connected to. And after he told me his story, both as they both told me their story, as soon as the meeting was done, I said, okay, I'm going to, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I guarantee you we're going to get this done.
I love that drive. Well, I also love that it's a positive business story. Usually the business stories that make it to the screen are the spectacular failures, the WeWorks, the Enrons.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more from Flamin' Hot producer Devon Franklin.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back with more from Franklin Entertainment head Devon Franklin.
You have a very active part of your business is being a motivational speaker, being an author, talking about your story and why you do what you do.
Why has that
been important to you? Why have you, as you have been very successful in Hollywood, you have maintained that part of your overall business, and it obviously is meaningful to you.
It is. You know, going back to, you know, what kind of got me through the tragedy of losing my father, it was church, it was ministry and movies. And those two became my passions. And, you know, I never thought about like how that would impact me professionally at the time. I mean, like being a teenager,
at 9 years old.
I just never thought about any of that. I just was like, oh, I really love movies and I love ministry and I love church. And, you know, I gave my first sermon when I was 15 years old and, you know, people were like, oh, you know, you need to preach. And I was like, well, I can preach. I said, but I'm going to Hollywood, you know, and my uncle who was the pastor, he would be like, well, you know, you can run, but you can't hide. And I said, well, I'm gonna run real fast because I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to be a pastor, which, you know, a pastor to me is someone who has a local congregation that they're responsible to. And that's very important, you know. And so I may have the gift of preaching, but I'm not, you know, technically a pastor. My younger brother is. He's the pastor of our church in Oakland that I grew up in. And so long story short, for me, as I came into the business, my first job, I got an internship. I went to USC as a business major, film minor. And I got an internship interview for the company that managed Will Smith and Jada. And it was called Handprint. The company's no longer around, but Handprint, and the principals were like Benny Medina and James Lasseter and Jeff Pollock.
Right, who went on to Overbrook.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So in that first interview, the office manager that was interviewing me, she asked me why I wanted to be in entertainment, and I told her, I said, I want to be in entertainment to make change. I believe entertainment is the most powerful medium in the world. And I told her, I said, if I can be a part of it, I think I can change people's lives for the better. And then at the end of the interview, she said, is there anything else you want me to know? I said, well, I said, I observe the Sabbath. I said, so Friday night sundown to Saturday night sundown, I don't work. I said, so if taking the internship would require me to work, I'm not going to take it. And so she was like, oh, okay. And then she said, all right, well, no problem. We'll work around it. And I got the internship, and that internship basically was the key that unlocked my entire career. But what I understood at that point in time was like, oh, I just have to be true to myself and what I believe and let whatever's meant to be, be. And I wasn't going in there trying to manipulate, you know, the interview to get the job. I just was honest, like, hey, you know, and I was communicating that, oh, my faith is important to me. And ultimately, what I was also communicating is that my faith is actually going to help you. Why? Because I'm a person that is integral. I'm a person of character. I'm a person where I have other things besides this business, you know. So in those things, I didn't even know I was communicating. So to answer, you know, your question, it has been organic, you know, that these areas are my passions, and being able to help people, you know, in the form of, you know, being on stage or being in a pulpit and articulating these different themes and providing guidance as, you know, as I'm learning how to live this thing called life and then sharing what I've learned. It all goes hand in hand, right? Because even when I'm speaking, I'm still telling stories and I'm using stories to articulate instruction and how to navigate difficult moments. So, you know, some may look at it and say, oh, these things don't fit. But to me, they fit completely well, not only because they're my passions, but it's all still the bedrock built upon storytelling.
It says so much about you that it came to you at, you know, 9 years old, what where you wanted to put your, you know, where you were looking for your path. But it also says so much that you could come to Hollywood and where people do anything to break in, and you knew yourself enough and knew what you needed to be successful and could articulate that at the intern stage. I think that, and you're right, whoever probably thought, if he can articulate that at that stage,
right,
he knows what it, you know, he knows who he is and he knows who he wants to be.
Yeah, so thank you. You know, and the interesting thing about that is every job that I have taken in the business, I always let them know. I mean, even when I was a studio executive at Columbia Pictures, you know, before I took that job, I mean, you know, Amy Pascal knew, you know, Doug Belgrad knew, and truly,
don't send me the grosses on Friday night because I'm not.
They would know literally, like any movie I worked on, they knew that my phone was going off. You know, I would turn it off when sun goes down Friday, and I wouldn't know how my movies were doing until I turned it back on sundown on Saturday. And I would always know if it was a success just by how many emails and stuff would come through. And if it was only a few, I was like, oh man, we missed it. But then also when you look at just even the movies that I did at Sony and then the movies that I'm doing now, I didn't know, again, that like, okay, me being who I am and having these passions can actually improve someone's bottom line. I mean, the first film I worked on for Amy was Pursuit of Happiness. And that was a movie that was shot in Oakland, where I'm from. And obviously I got my start working for, you know, Will and James Lasseter. When I graduated college, I was James Lasseter's assistant for 2 years. And so to be able to work on that film was great to be able to, you know, service them, but it also was a film. Once we saw the first cut, like it just was so emotional. We all were, you know, literally like in tears in the theater. And I said, well, if this movie could help me, and I'm a person of faith, I believe it can help a lot of people of faith. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I put together a whole marketing campaign, and I didn't know that CEs didn't do marketing at the time. I didn't know that. So I just said, well, you know, here's what I would do if we were going to take the message of hope and inspiration in this film to a core audience that wants it. And I said, here's what we do. And the studio bought into it, and I was able to take Will on the road to a number of events and churches. And, and long story short, it was very successful. And that was when I think, you know, the powers that be said, oh, wow, okay, got it. So there's something here that we're missing.
Right.
That there's an audience we're not serving. And for me, what I do is not even about the business. It's about the people. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, somebody's going to see Pursuit of Happiness, and it's going to change the trajectory of their life. Somebody's going to see Flamin' Hot, and instead of, you know, literally saying, I can't make it, they're going to see the movie and say, oh, I can do it now. Because he did it. So for me, it's about the people and using all of these things that I've been privileged to do, from writing books to producing TV and movies and being in movies, you know, all of these avenues to me, it's still the same thesis. How do we help people and how do we bring them hope?
Mm-hmm. And you might be interested to know, we did a story, it was a couple years ago, about what are some of the most aired movies on television, and Pursuit of Happiness was up there.
It's
running somewhere.
I mean, look, I love Will, and I've been able to work on a lot of his films. That's my favorite.
What do you find is the appetite right now for things that are either a little more, you know, overtly or explicitly faith-based versus you know, stories that have inspiration, that have uplift to them, but aren't maybe not as directly focused on a faith experience.
So like in terms of appetite in the marketplace?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's such an interesting question because when you look at the marketplace right now, it's like, I would say over the past, you know, 5 years at least, you know, the desire for studios to make faith-based films has gone down.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of my sense.
Substantially.
Yeah. At a time when you'd think it would be going up.
I know, but here's what happens in my experience, that this business tends to look at faith, and I don't think this is a good thing, tends to look at faith through a political lens. And I think that sometimes the only way that people in the business understand faith is through what may be put on CNN or Fox News. And so as a result of you know, the politicization of this audience, I think it makes those decision makers hesitant about programming for an audience that could be on the wrong side of whatever political agenda is being serviced. And so as a result, over the years, you know, like when you look at, you know, when Obama was in office and whatnot, and then as Trump came in, just speaking very frank, that changed the tide, right? Because so much of, you know, Trump's success had a lot to do with, you know, his connection with the evangelical world, which is obviously a faith, you know, major faith community in our culture, in our country. And as a result, I think a lot of Hollywood decision makers started to pull back on making, you know, a lot of faith-based films. In addition to, because the faith-based space was so hot, there were a lot of faith films that got made, you know, from a major studio and independently that did not work at the box office. If anything, there may have been oversaturation.
Right.
So it was a combination, I think, of what was happening, you know, politically. And again, that's just my assessment. And then I think it was also the fact that the business itself seemed to be, you know, not as lucrative as it once was. And as a result, the desire to have faith films over the past few years has waned. Now, with that being said, you know, recently there was the Jesus Revolution film that came out that Lionsgate distributed, because Lionsgate has been very clear. We're in the faith-based business. They have a deal with my buddies, the Irwin brothers. They run Kingdom Story Company.
Right, right.
And they've done a lot of successful films in the faith-based space. And Lionsgate, you know, funds their company and says, we're in this business. And they've made multiple films with them. And Jesus Revolution is so far the most successful film. And it lets people know, like, oh, wow, there's an audience out here that wants to see films like this. And so I think that has restarted the conversation in the business. And then also, you know, I've met with various streamers, and, you know, the thing about streamers is they have access to research, consumer research, even more so than in my experience dealing with traditional studios. And what I've been surprised to discover is that a lot of streamers, based upon their consumer research, their findings are, oh, wow, people want more content that's uplifting, that's faith, that has spirituality. Whoa. However, there's still been a disconnect between the data and the decision to do it. And that's where I try to come in and provide the solution. Because any great movie, to me, doesn't matter if you had that experience. Doesn't matter if you even agree with the character. You can still relate. You don't have to have had the experience, you know, of when I think of Rocky, you don't have to have had the experience of being a boxer to understand what it feels like to be an underdog. So the nuance that I try to do in with the films that I produce, and even the shows that I produce, is, okay, there's a core audience that I know wants this movie. So, like, let's take Flamin' Hot. There's a core audience that I know is going to respond to that film. But there's also people that may never see the film if they think it's for a core audience, but if they think, oh, wow, I heard this is an inspirational film, I'm going to see it. So there have to be universal themes with a specific story that help transcend the genre. Mm-hmm. So when I did Miracles from Heaven, it was like, okay, how many people can relate to having a child that has an incurable disease? The child falls down a tree, inside of a tree, hits her head three times, and the disease is gone. And she talks about how she went to heaven. How many people can relate to that? Nobody, right? But you can relate to the idea that when we go through hard times, it's our community that helps us through. Right. And when you see that film, it's all about the power of community.
And being a parent and that has a with a child that has something that you can't easily fix.
That's right.
A
that's
lot
right.
of us can relate to that.
That's right. That's right. So for me, it was like, okay, we're going to keep it specific enough that a faith audience would or family audience would watch the film and say, oh, yes, this movie is helping with my faith. But the themes are so universal that anybody watching the film can come to it and say, wow, that was a good movie. So for me, that's the nuance. And I feel like it's we're at a good point where I think things are really getting, you know, picking back up in terms of momentum. But I still think there's a step in this direction of really planting the flag for this audience that this business has not just yet done.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the examples that you mentioned, Pursuit of Happiness, Flamin' Hot, other things that you've done are really good examples of, I think many people think faith-based, they think it's going to be
a sermon.
Yeah.
It's going to be dogmatic.
Very
no.
sugary and very like.
Yes, that's not true.
You know, full of cliches, frankly.
It's not true.
I think that you have shown that those stories are broader and that the faith-based community can handle more than I think most studio executives probably give them credit for.
And also, you know, this is going to sound completely crazy, but do you know like what the biggest faith-based franchise is ever? Star Wars. Think
exactly.
about it. You use the Force, Luke. What
exactly.
is that? Believe in something you cannot see.
Right.
That is faith.
Fight for something bigger than yourself.
That's faith,
it's
okay?
So true.
And the reason why that franchise has endured, you know, and become what it is for 40, going on 50 years is because when you see that first film, you are inspired. And any child, any adult can watch that movie and watch those movies and say, wow, right, I got to believe in the unseen. You know, I got to walk by faith. And you don't even realize that that's what it is, but mm-hmm. that's what it is. So, you know, my goal is to expand how people are looking at what we call faith and expand what people believe is possible when it comes to inspiration and aspiration. And Flamin' Hot is just an example of that and what I want to do going forward.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcast or Amazon Music. We love to hear from listeners. Please go to Variety.com and sign up for the free weekly Strictly Business newsletter. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.